Welcome, everybody. This is Then and Now. I'm Brad Sham, and we are delighted to be sitting with the defensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys, one of the most respected coaches in all the business, Rod Marinelli. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You'll hear some extraneous noise that you don't always hear because Rod and I are having this conversation at the Cowboys training camp in Oxnard. And so this is Then and Now. And some of the now jumps off the page at everybody. So I'd like to start with a little then.
Good.
And although some people may know some of this, you actually began to rub shoulders with the Dallas Cowboys when you were in college.
Yes.
And they were in Thousand Oaks. Tell people that story.
Right. It was great. I went to college at Cal Lutheran. And as we were there, they practiced there. Our head coach was real close to Coach Landry. I was Bob Schelt. And it worked out nice. My junior and senior year, I was able to kind of work in the weight room with
Alvin Roy,
and he was unbelievable. And Coach Stautner, I was able to pick up towels and stuff like that. But so it was really a great way to learn. Came from a head coach in college, was a great teacher. And then you saw Coach Landry, how he did business, see the organization of a practice. It was powerful.
Keeping in mind that you were a college kid helping out, on the staff,
right.
What kinds of things were you able to soak up from guys like Tom Landry and Ernie Stautner?
You know, I just think how they taught and class. I'll never forget that. How they handle themselves, the class, the structure. I thought the structural practice was awesome, and there was great teaching. I saw you could see that right now, the teaching and details, and of course they obviously played really hard and fast and physical, but it was a pleasure to be around.
Watching you coach, mm-hmm. especially in a training camp situation, it looks like the teaching is part of what you still enjoy the most. Is that a fair statement?
By far. You know, you love, because I think that's one thing you want to help the man improve and be the type of player he wants. We individually improve a man, we improve our team automatically. So every guy that we can touch, so he can gain a little bit more, improve a little bit more, the finer things of football, and then the mindset of football.
Let's go back a little further in the then.
Yeah.
I've read you quoted as having said you knew you wanted to coach from the time you were in high school, and you used to hitchhike to the Rams games at the Coliseum. Is that right?
That is right. And USC.
And USC.
So I would, when I was in high school, SC, I went down to a couple Ram games, hitchhiked. In those days, you kind of did that.
Right.
And then the SC, they would, kind of recruiting each, but you'd take a bus or a hitchhike, and they give you a hot dog, a dollar, and a program. And you'd have to usher people, then you sit and watch a game. So it was awesome. And then I kept my money and hitchhiked back.
And what made you know you wanted to coach from that early of an age?
I was when I got involved in it, and I know the coaches that I had early. My high school coaches were unbelievable. And I think most guys that played high would say that. But they were a special breed at that time, very demanding, and they loved their players in a hard way.
Let's stay with that for a minute, because there's one more part of the then. Your collegiate career before Cal Lutheran, you were at Utah and in Vietnam in between.
Yeah.
And you and I are the same age, so I've got a frame of reference for the impact of what the war in Vietnam had on young people then. How did it shape you as a man and as a football coach?
Oh, boy. You go through something, you're different when you get back. Okay, and I think when you get back, you appreciate it.
Tell people where you were and how long you were there.
I was there a year, and I was in the infantry. And but when you get back, I was married, had a daughter while I was over there. But I think you get a deeper feeling of appreciation of work, okay, and opportunity. You really love opportunity. And when it does come your way, you take it full force and you go with it. The amount of work is not an issue.
I know what training is like in the Army. We both know people of a certain age will know what you meant when you said that your high school coaches coached you hard.
Yes.
And I think your reputation now is of no nonsense, but clearly your players, when we talk to them, have great affection for how hard you coach them. Can you coach players the same way you were coached?
Oh, yeah. No question in my mind. Because you got to be you. And they know if it's real and you care. And the key with care, it's an action word. If you don't show it by action, there's no caring. So just knowing things about them, maybe their family. I like to do things on every Saturday during the season. I have man building. First 20 minutes. We talk about just how to build a man, real man. And you just got to help them. I have a lesson plan. We talk through it. So I enjoy that part of it. And they know I have their best interest because I coach them hard. If you lax on them, I don't have their best interest. I want them to feel buddy-buddy. I'm not interested in that. Okay, I want them to become what they want to become.
Can you, without revealing anything, can you say more about the man building?
Oh, sure. I just think it's... I'll get into different subjects. You know, it could be sometimes just how you spend your money. Real men, at the end of the day, know how to take care of their stuff. Okay? They know how to save it. A real man does that. Okay? If you have a family, a real man knows how to take care of it. And if you don't, you want to learn. And I've got to be a stand-up man throughout. And that's all the stuff we kind of hit on. A lot of things like that. And sometimes you got to sacrifice. I give them a great story. I've said this forever. It's like, and I think this hits home. I talk about an insurance salesman to him, okay? And he's got to go out and sell to put food on the table, okay? And I told him, the guy goes out and hits 100 doors, went as hard as he possibly could, tried hard, came home, wife said, how many did you sell? Hey, I really went hard. I didn't sell any, but I gave it my best. That's not good enough. In our world, we have to do what's required. That's a man's world, okay? I have to do what's required. My players have to, and I have to teach them that. Because once they get out of football, they've got to do what's required. Put food on the table. It's not good enough to try hard. You have to do it. That's our country.
That hasn't changed for play. Has the players' receptivity to that changed over the years?
Oh, I don't think so. If you teach it with a lesson and where it affects their life, if they know I'm building them, all the man, you're building the entire man, they want that. And it's got to be presented right, and you have to have you just can't come off the top of your head. I write little lesson plans up in the summer, things I think that will help us grow as men. And then I think you take that into your playing game, because when you leave the game, you want to be a full man.
You're also a big history buff.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if that's part of the man building, part of the things you try to teach. You've given them things to read over time,
oh, yeah.
Have you not?
Oh, yeah.
How do you incorporate that?
Well, I'll see something I think it's really good, or some guys I'll give it to, some I may not. You know, they won't stay on it long enough, or maybe I'll shorten it down. And I just believe you're preparing for after football. Learning to read, or not learn to read, but enjoying it, and then finding other subjects that you want to be in. And then I always give them some certain football books that I think are really good. I gave D. Law the one Head Slap with Deacon Jones. And that's a book now. And I mean, he read that. That's about 600-page book, and I mean, he saw that in half. But all of a sudden, you see that hardness from that era, how they prepare in that era, and it's just mindset, and you're learning the history of your profession.
People who are listening are going to be intrigued by that. I'm going to ask you to give us, recommend three football books and three history books.
Okay, I got to think for a second.
Okay.
So I go through these things pretty quick, but I can't remember the name
of the book. How many books do you read in a year?
Oh, I would say 30.
30 a year.
Yeah, 30.
Okay.
I slow down during the season.
Of course.
And when Pride Still Mattered, Vince Lombardi.
Yeah.
Then the Chuck Noll one came out. I can't remember the title.
We'll find it.
Yeah, and that is a terrific
biography of Coach
Noll. Yes, because it's hard to find anything. What really intrigues me there, Coach Dungy played for him and coached for him, and that's our system where it came from. And one of the great, great fundamentalists in history. And then all the books on Coach Wooden, and the best one I liked, They Haven't Learned Until You Taught.
John Wooden?
Yeah, it's a terrific book.
Okay, there you go. There's your homework, folks. So you mentioned Tony Dungy, and that's going to get me to the system that you what a staff you had. People talk about the players in Tampa, the Super Bowl team, and the development of the Tampa too. And you did. You had great players.
Oh yeah.
But you had a great staff.
Yeah.
Tony Dungy, Monty Kiffin, Lovie Smith. Can you coach the same system, the same way with today's rules?
I think what you have to do is, the one thing Coach would always say, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. It's how you do things. You can add a spice here, you can do something here, but if you put it in, it's how you do it. How you install it, how you teach it, is it part, and do you get the habits it takes? So yeah, you do adjust. You know, and we've adjusted coverages and things like that a little bit more. I don't know if you can stay in cover two the whole day, and you need your rushers up front.
Have you found that as college football has changed positionally, offensive teams have a tougher time finding fullbacks and tight ends? Do you therefore have trouble finding? I don't even want to use Derrick Brooks as an example because he was an exceptional man and player, but. I mean, are there the guys who were the staples of that Tampa defense?
Yeah.
Do you have the same kinds of players of coming to you available today?
There's times, yeah, you do. I would think Sean Lee would fit in that system, heartbeat. And these two young backers we got right now, they're in the same mold. Smart, run.
You're talking about Leighton Van Der Esch
and Jay. And, I mean, they got – and some of these other guys, they all run and hit, and our scouts done a great job fitting the types of athletes we want. And then if you look up front, you take a guy like D-Law, fit, Randy, fit, Taco. I mean, and this young kid we got, 74, fits. Now, we got to keep working to get the inside guys right now. I think Malik is a fitter. You know, we got to get him going. So the linebackers and in the secondary, we're probably a lot more talented here.
I'm chuckling to myself because all of us who are around multiple football teams at this time of year when you got 90 guys, and last year you had 90 guys and half of them were different, and it's common for coaches to call players by their number and not always know their name, but you are famous for giving them nicknames.
Oh, yeah.
How long have you been doing that? How'd that start?
It's been in college. When I was back in college, you give guys... at Arizona State, I gave them all horses names. And Shante Carver was actually Mr. Ed. And he was the only talking horse I had.
Now, why was he Mr. Of course, he was here.
Yeah.
Why was he Mr. Ed?
Well, because he talked the most. And he was kind of complaining when I was running him. So he was the talking horse. He was Mr. Ed.
Now, I talked to Dorrance Armstrong early in camp, and I said, what's your nickname? He said, oh, it changes. He said, sometimes it's DA, sometimes it's Armstrong, sometimes it's Arm Weak. Sometimes have you found
I'm just about zeroing in on Arm Weak.
Arm Weak.
Yeah.
And do you try to find a nickname that will just make it easy for you to remember them, or to provoke them and get them to think?
Sometimes it's provoking, sometimes it's lifting. When I had Jason Hatcher here, I think at first he was not beaten down, but you know, he's always a rotation guy or back, and he became Big Daddy. Big Daddy Lipson. And go look him up. And he goes, and you give me this name? Yeah, that's who you're gonna be. And he still calls himself Big Daddy.
And after I'm sure he had no idea who Big Daddy Lipscomb is.
Yeah.
By the way, those of you listening who don't know who Big Daddy Lipscomb is, David Lipscomb, go look him up. Like Coach Marinelli just said.
Fun.
Go look him up. And then he probably came back wide eyed and said, you think I can be that?
Yes. And I put pictures on his locker of Big Daddy. That's who you are. That's who I believe. So I believe that. Okay, he had bend, talent, size, strength, all of it, and I just felt he could do that. And D-Law, you know, I mean, I call him Deke, you know, I mean, there he goes.
Because
you know?
He reminds you of Deacon Jones.
Same left end, same speeds, hands are quick, Deke, you know, so you just kind of go on and you just don't want to give a name and then pull it back, you know, so I kind of feel it as we go.
I don't know anybody in this business who is ego-less. Assistant coaches especially have to tend to be able to keep theirs in control. But you seem to be, you project at least, someone who is not consumed by ego.
Oh, yeah.
A career as a lineman,
yeah.
and then a soldier, and then an assistant coach for the most part would dictate that. How do you, especially when you're man building,
yeah.
How do you work with ego? How have you learned to control yours?
I just
yours?
Really believe it's about the game of football, and it's not about us. And I think one of the things I do when you're in a leadership role, I promote the assistants. I want these guys to be great. That's because when they're great, the team is great, and so that's important to me. And I just think it's at the end of the day, you teach. Game day, they play and they execute. And now, if they're not executing, they reflect me. That reflects my teaching, okay? And I prefer to have it in a good reflection. But it's not...
Do you tell them that? Do you say that to them?
All the time. They're not here and me here, okay? We're not separate. We're locked. Is my teaching good enough to help him become what he wants to be? If he's lazy, my job to get him unlazy. And however I have to do that. So I think when you're together... And you're working together for the benefit of the team and the benefit of the man's future.
You were the head coach of the Detroit Lions,
yep,
for 3 years. Why did you want to be the head coach?
Oh, I think you're always, since ever, you know, you want that. You want to have an opportunity and state your beliefs and do your beliefs and all those things.
One of those years was notably forgettable for a lot of fans.
Yeah.
My guess is you'll never forget it.
No. And
I'm interested to know how that 0-16 season,
yeah,
impacted you and what it taught you.
Here's what it was awesome what I learned, okay? I came from Tampa, and everything we had and did, our beliefs worked, okay? I went to Detroit. I had to battle a lot of different things, which is fine, but my beliefs weren't working. And what I did, I stayed the course. Because I believed in everything. Now, it didn't end up the way I wanted it, but that resilience and the belief on how we do things. Went from there to Chicago, the beliefs kick in again. And here we're on our way.
And those guys, I talked to a lot of your former,
yeah,
players. They all swear by you.
Yeah.
Is that your reward?
I think the reward is respect in football. Okay, I stayed the course. Our last practice of the year was outstanding. Every practice we had, I thought those guys did everything, and they tried really hard, and our staff worked hard, and so you give that to the game of football. You walk out of there, say, okay, not good enough, got fired, but we try to represent the game in the correct way.
I have a feeling you've already answered this, but I think it's an important point to make and give you an opportunity to discuss it briefly. You said a minute ago that one of your core philosophies as a coach is giving credit and recognition to the coaches you coach with.
Right.
You have gone out of your way to be, at least it seems to,
yeah,
some of us, to be praiseworthy of Chris Richard,
yes,
since the day he walked in the door. Now, there might be some veteran coaches of our age who would see an energetic young guy who seems to have future head coach written all over, right? And not be quite so generous,
yeah,
with the praise and the responsibility and everything else. I think if anyone who's just listened to you talk about,
yeah,
your philosophy understands it, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Sure.
Why have you been so generous with Chris? And why have you, and so, yeah, accepting?
Oh, one, what he brings us is special. And, I mean, he's that Legion of Boom, all the things, and his energy. And to bring him in here and not allow him to be the best he can be for our players. I want our players to be the best they can be. That's all I want. And we're here to win. And I want the best for these players. And he has brought them so much stuff. And that's my reward.
You nodded when I said he was looked like a head coach in waiting.
Oh, yeah.
What about him says that to you?
Well, I guess best thing I could say is he reminds me of Mike Tomlin, cut and dry. I was with Mike for 5 years
in Tampa. Right. Is it the energy? Is it the mental approach? Is it
energy and teaching, communication, and smart. When I say smart, smart is quick too. Quick and smart. They pick it up. They can see it right now. And he's been well schooled under Pete Carroll, who was schooled under Monty Kiffin. Okay, and so there's a bite of that system, a lot of similarities. But he brings something to us that, man, it's like having a great tailback and you're a passing coach. Well, I don't want to give it to the tailback. I want to throw the ball. You know what I'm saying? No, let's do what's right for our defense. And he brings a lot of juice and a lot of knowledge.
It's impossible to either watch you work or talk to you and not feel the enthusiasm. You're as enthusiastic and passionate about your love of this game, it seems to me, as you must have been when you started coaching.
No question. Nothing changed.
So you just want to keep... I'm just going to tell you, people, because we're the same age, people ask me sometime, are you going to retire? And I always say, no, I want to die at the mic. I love what I'm doing too much. Is that you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just... long as I can help and impact, okay, and do the things I should be all the time, and that's I love it, and I love the development of the player.
Two more things.
Sure.
I am told that you incorporate foreign travel, particularly to do with historical sites may or may not have to do with a war or a battle somewhere, and that you this is still something you do regularly.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit?
I think the number one thing that, for me, okay, I wake up every day, and what challenges me is I want to learn. If I want to learn football, I want to learn history, I want to learn. And that, I'll have that hobby. For some people say, I don't need hobbies. I want to learn every day. I want to learn something about that. Somebody said, oh, God, I'm going to read that. And this summer I went to Greece. I learned all about the mythology. Oh, God, that was friggin' awesome.
Like one of the first times you kind of pursued studying mythology?
Oh, gosh.
What was awesome about studying mythology?
We had a great guy who was a professor in college at one time, really knew his stuff, brought us in at 6 in the morning. Like before we learned about the Trojan Wars, he said, I'm going to teach the Trojan Wars and then we're going to go see the sites and all that stuff. Okay, great. So I was the first in class. And I got to play Cyclops.
Okay. Here's the other thing.
Sure.
Because your interests are so diverse.
Yeah.
Fantasy dinner. Invite any three people, living or dead.
Interesting.
I'll tell you what, I'll let you have 5.
Okay. John Wooden. I would love that.
Did you ever get to meet him at Thousand Oaks? Mm-hmm. Talk to him there?
I went to a class all day with him one time, but I'd love to be able to just sit and go. And General George Marshall. Okay.
Because you've studied his tactics and the...
His ego, down. He should have had the Normandy invasion. They just said, no, we're going to keep it home. Because it's more important. They gave it to Eisenhower and how he handled it. I think organizational, all those things, he was terrific. I'd say Chuck Noll would be really somebody. For me, these are all people in history.
It's your list. It's your party.
there I would look at. Teddy Roosevelt and Lincoln.
I would like to be the waiter. I would like to wait tables. I think we're all ready to go play for you, and we're so grateful for your time.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for your energy.
Your questions were awesome. Best interview I've had in a lot of years, and I mean that.
That means more to me than a nickname. Rod Marinelli, thanks very much.
You got it.
That's Then and Now with Coach Rod Marinelli. I'm Brad Sham.
Then and Now with Brad Sham is a production of Vocal. For more information and more programming, please visit vocalnow.com. That's VOKALnow.com.